ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
While the tragedy of Gaza never seems to leave the headlines, the war in Ukraine dips in and out of the news. That's despite some of the most intense fighting in recent months. Tetiana Stavnichi heads the Ukraine office of the Catholic aid agency Caritas. She's in Australia meeting supporters.
You know, in Ukraine, we've been experiencing an escalation in the war, which started at the end of the summer of 2024. That's been an increased pressure along the frontline areas and also massive strikes inside the country with drones and different missiles, ballistic and cruise missiles. So what does that cause? That cause a continuous flow of evacuations out of the eastern part of the country where there's pressure along the front line. And these evacuations are incredibly vulnerable. It's usually people who stayed behind for some reason. So people who are elderly and alone, with somebody who has mobility issues in the family, or maybe someone with special needs. So people who had a difficult time leaving earlier on. And now as the pressure of the front line is pressing upon them, and there's a line of destruction that the Russian forces create as they move forward, so the need to evacuate is pretty strong.
One figure leapt out at me recently. I read 100,000 Ukrainians have suffered amputations, not all of them troops. What do we know about this terrible statistic?
Yes, it's true. A lot of it happens, again, from different bombs, missiles, drones. With the drone attacks, you end up having upper limb amputations. We've developed really strong rehabilitation, initial surgery and rehabilitation centers in Ukraine to address those needs. The people are being assisted. I think the challenge for us is developing long-term solutions, because when you have amputations, the rehabilitation process will be a lifelong journey. And the importance of developing a network of rehabilitation services, people who are qualified to be able to help people work through the different challenges that arise as you learn to live with the new circumstances.
When we see images of particularly the capital, Kyiv, on television, it looks like a very functional city. You even see stories about the coffee shops being open and the restaurants being open and the people in the metro system. What does that mask, though? What reality does that mask?
Masks a couple of different realities. So one of them is certainly the reality of these attacks, massive attacks at night Kyiv has been subject to for over a year. I mean, even more than that, but intensely, I would say, for a year now. The air alarm goes off at night, and then you check to see what is it that's happening. Is it because there's a couple of drones flying in, or does it mean that there's a drone swarm coming in? Are there ballistic missiles prepared to be launched? Have cruise missiles been launched? So we track what's happening, and then you make a decision what to do. There's a two-wall rule, because if there's an explosion near you, the danger is the windows being blown in. The casualties come from the glass. So if you're two walls in, that you're in a more safe location, or going to a shelter. In general, there's, I would say, a pretty marked lack of sleep. So, and when there's a big drone attack, people usually are not sleeping at night, and then usually you try and catch up a little bit, and then you get up in the morning and you go to work.
Tetiana, you've mentioned drones. We read a lot about drones as bearing weapons that are used to explode buildings for mass attacks. But there's another more insidious use of drones, as I understand, Russian drones in Ukraine. What's that?
Yeah, it's the FPV drones that are closer to the frontline areas. Those are actually drones that are being operated. They target specific people. They target cars. That's a very unsettling experience for both civilian and military.
Who would be targeted individually? Aid workers? I mean, what would be the aim of a Russian drone essentially stalking an individual Ukrainian?
I'm not quite sure what the reason is, except to create terror and harming individuals. So there have been, you know, civilians who have been targeted. There have been humanitarian convoys and cars that have been targeted, in addition to the military. So Ukrainians have set up these nets along the roads to try and prevent the drones reaching their target.
When the war ends, what will the scars be, and what will the main task of an organization like Caritas be?
The first one, obviously, is psychosocial support. It's a way of helping people to develop resilience, building coping mechanisms, helping people to process through trauma. So we have crisis centers throughout the country. We're also working with the government on this new effort called resilience centers. Both of those offer psychosocial support to people who come. Our crisis centers also offer additional support case management to help people resolve the problems that they have and help them to integrate into local communities. In addition, we're working in schools. So we're working with teachers, students, and parents. We did our first pilot program in the buffer zone in that first phase of the war, because you'll remember the war started in 14, yes. Not in 22. 22 was an escalation of an already ongoing war. Yeah. The other piece that's been really important for us is that we have developed primary care medical centers. In those primary care medical centers, we're able to offer medical services both to patients in an outpatient way, but we're also starting to work on telemedicine and mobile teams that can go out into rural areas and provide medical services. And that would include also rehabilitation packages, also mental health packages. So we're in the process of better equipping these medical centers that we launched in 2024.
What's the implication, Tetiana, of 5 to 7 million Ukrainians having had to leave the country since the beginning of 2022? Most of them women and children, but I'm sure a lot of those women filled essential roles in Ukraine. What's the implication of that exodus? I know some people have come back. What's that implication?
When you talk about those kinds of things, you know, you can look at big numbers, but the truth is behind every number, there's a human face, and everybody has their own story and their own path that they found. And I think that's really important to understand. And the importance of creating policies that can kind of help people to integrate into where they've been displaced to, or help to find safe pathways of return. It's really individual. Yeah. Mm. And the importance is respecting the individual's right to freedom and safety, that I think is kind of a core issue.
Yeah, but are those teachers gone, nurses gone, doctors gone? I guess that's what I'm asking about part of this exodus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I think that's part of the reason why, for example, in Caritas, we launched these 10 medical centers. It's one of the reasons why we're working in the schools with the teachers and the students to help do stabilization activities. So the idea is to create a strength of resilience and ability to work through the circumstances that we're in, build strength in that. And then, you know, with people who have left, they also need to be supported. And then some of them will decide to come back when the war is over and they feel that there is enough safety. And maybe some of them won't, you know, but again, that's this respect for the human person and for their choice. Of course, in Ukraine, we would like them to come back. Yeah, of course.
Caritas is a Catholic aid agency. We have been covering for several years now the efforts by the Vatican to broker some sort of peace in this conflict. The late Pope Francis worked very hard on that. The war continues, though, but I believe the Vatican has made some major breakthroughs in one area. What's that?
Yeah, so the Vatican has been very active in helping to return children to Ukraine and also in the prisoner exchanges. If you think about these attempts to get people to the table, that's a place where there's already groups sitting at the table and they're coming to decisions, common decisions, and we're able to negotiate something. I think that's a really good platform to build on and to see what else can be developed from there.
Yeah, these were children, by the way, who were taken into Russian territory, who've been brought back.
Yeah, that's right.
What challenges does a Catholic organization have in working in an Orthodox country?
In Ukraine, the Greek Catholics make up, depending on which survey you use, probably around 10% of the population. We also have interesting collaboration. There is a similar organization in the Orthodox Church, in the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, called Elios. They also do kind of similar work to Caritas. The needs in Ukraine are so huge. The number of people in need and the societal challenge that we have to meet that need. There's a great need for collaboration right now, a great need finding partnerships and networking. It's one of the reasons in Caritas, we were one of the founding members of an alliance of civil society organizations working in humanitarian response in Ukraine, trying to build that kind of platform where we're talking to one another, where we're finding areas where we can advocate together, both in the humanitarian community, the international one, and also, I think in the future, looking at how we can partner better with the Ukrainian government. Because again, to solve all the social issues that are already here and that will arise in the future, it's going to need everybody at the table.
Well, speaking of everyone at the table, Pope Leo has announced that his first overseas visit is to the Middle East. But what about a papal visit to Ukraine? I know that Francis thought about the idea. What impact would a papal visit from Leo have in Ukraine?
We're waiting for him. Yes, there's always been an invitation to the Pope to come to Ukraine. I think it would have a huge significance for the people of Ukraine in the similar way that when John Paul II visited Ukraine, it had ripple effects. Yeah, it was a sense of encounter with the leader of the Catholic Church. You know, I wouldn't underestimate the spiritual impact that that also has of brotherhood and really bringing in, as a person, bringing peace into the country.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the diplomatic heft, though, that a papal visit brings. Is that, in your view, something that could accelerate some sort of settlement?
I mean, I don't know, that would be really for diplomats to answer. I can tell you pastorally, for us, it would be an amazing experience.
Tetiana Stevnichi, she's the head of Caritas Ukraine. Thank you for joining us on the program.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and a huge thanks to all our Australian supporters.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.